Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast bringing you the latest interviews and news inside the Debian community, brought to you by frostbitemedia.org, the network bringing you your favorite GNU Linux podcasts.
Hello world, this is Slick Zero, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Hacker Public Radio. You've listened to it enough, I'm sure. You love the shows, but what makes it different from other podcasts? It's produced by the community. That's right, people just like you. There's no restrictions on how long the show could be, nor on the topic it could cover, as long as they are of interest to hackers. It's so easy to contribute to. Just go to hackerpublicradio.org and click on Contribute. All the information you need is right there.
Hey, thanks for listening. Before we get into the interview, I want to mention our sponsor, HostGator. They're a hosting company that has shared hosting, VPS hosting, dedicated servers. You can get a shared hosting plan for $5 a month with unlimited bandwidth, unlimited disk space. These guys are awesome. They run their servers on CentOS. This is what all the Frostbite stuff is running on, and I want to thank them for being a sponsor. So if you want to go check out HostGator, go to frostbitemedia.org/HostGator and sign up for an account and check them out. They're really great. They've been nothing but fantastic to us. So check out frostbitemedia.org/HostGator. Here's the interview. Hello, welcome to This Week in Debian. Today we've got a great episode for you. We're speaking with Jonas Sminigal. He's part of the Debian community and a very active member. Jonas, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
thank you for your time. So Jonas, before we get too far into the interview, I like to ask everyone that we interview, how did you first get involved into Linux?
Back in the late 80s, I was messing with desktop publishing on PC. Mm. It was when Windows actually started becoming useful. And then I realized that fonts was really crappy on Windows, and was someone showed me Macintosh. Mm. Then I messed with Macintosh for a while and started working with networking because networking cards was integrated into all Macintosh. And at some point I realized that it was really slow to set up like a mail server, then having to click a lot of times with the mouse all the time. Mm. And so then I realized that the scripting or the shell-based things was so much easier if you had a Unix-based system. Mm. And then I asked some people at a university to help me out with setting up a BSD, I think it was at the beginning, but then slowly I figured out that the thing should be Linux. And my first Linux was actually a Red Hat, I think.
Okay.
But then I had a modem connection, and I had a very slow computer, so I didn't want to install the X11 stuff. And after 1 or 2 hours of installing off the internet, very expensive modem connection, I had this computer and I couldn't install more packages because the package selection tool was graphical.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I looked into, first I found SUSE and then I found Debian with the deselect. And I haven't switched since, so.
So how long have you been a Debian user?
Oh, since 95 on.
Wow.
I think so. 95, 90. No. It got to be later. 98.
Okay.
I think. 98 or 99. Yeah. Year 2000, I was in the States, and I was remote controlling my machines from the States in Denmark. I'm from Denmark.
Oh, nice. So. is that where you are now? You're in Denmark?
Yes.
What's open source software, free software like in your area? What is it like over there?
Oh, I mean, when you mean over there, in Europe, it's blossoming. It's very big.
Mm. How about
Germany? But I mean, in Denmark,
yeah.
Denmark is crappy. Denmark is. I mean. There's too many politically. There's too many people pouring money in the pockets of the politicians to emphasize Microsoft-based stuff.
Yeah.
And it's some of the parts of how to choose when how they choose non-open standards and calling them open and making huge documentation of how this is open, even if it isn't. It's so hilarious, some of it, that I mean, the Norwegian politicians and the Norwegian open source free software guys are laughing at the Danish governmental institutes institutions because of it's so obvious that they're paid to do this.
How about for like the regular person on the street, do a lot of people know what GNU Linux is, or do they not really know what you're talking about?
Then they know it. I mean, people know Wikipedia and people know Google today, and people know think that Google is the free software thing. And so, I mean, everybody knows what it is.
Okay.
Very few people know what it is.
You're right. Yeah, that's kind of the problem we have now. So yeah, the reason that
we have a lot of Macintosh in Denmark, relatively. So people have this knowledge that Macintosh is, in a way, has something to do with Unix, Linux, something free software. So they know that there's something about it.
Okay.
They can't. Most people can't point out
right.
What part of it is. So.
Okay. So yeah, the reason why we have you on today is to talk about the Freedom Box. You're very interested in this project, and I'd like to talk about Freedom Box, what it is, and what kind of started this idea. And so for our listeners who maybe haven't heard of Freedom Box, could you tell us what the thought process and the idea is behind Freedom Box?
I mean, it's I can tell you how it started for me, at least.
Sure, yeah, sure.
There's this yearly conference of Debian. I don't know exactly what is the audience of this. Actually, do everybody know what Debian is?
I would imagine. Yeah. I think we have the majority is Debian contributors and users. So
Yeah. Okay. I was at the Debian conference, DebConf 10 in New York this summer, and there the main speaker there was Eben Moglen.
Yeah.
The lawyer, the main lawyer of the Free Software Foundation, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And I've never heard him before. I've never heard his name actually before, but it was amazing what he had. His message was targeted specifically for Debian, in how Debian could help the world move on from the current situation of the cloud problem, as he was talking about. And his message to the Debian developers was, take what you have, these packages of software, and then squeeze them into one of these ARM boxes, and then polish it a little bit, and that's it, more or less. I mean, then what you can do is, or we can do, Debian. What we can do is we can help end users, and not ourselves, our mothers and our friends, help them to run their own server at home. Because also when I then look at other speeches he has done recently, his agenda is to try to compete with big business of cloud services by preaching to everybody to run their own server at home.
Yeah.
And Debian, of course, can then be helping out with the distro for that.
Right.
No doubt he's doing the same preaching for everybody else who wants to listen to him. So he might say exactly the same thing to Fedora or to Ubuntu or whoever wants to listen. So it's not like Debian has been chosen to do this. But really, what happened to me and for a few others, quite a few, I think, was that this was so concrete a project. It seemed so easy to just start working on it, and of course it's never that easy in reality.
Yeah.
It's and especially with Debian, everybody who knows Debian is that we are slow because we want to do everything so perfect. So the thing is, now 6 months later, very few things have happened that is concrete. We have a wiki page where we're collecting what do we want to do here? Some people have actually thrown together an image of things that might be a starting point for mashing up something. But mostly what we've done is collecting what is free pieces of software. What is pieces of software that helps you with freedom in the network, freedom in the cloud, or freedom from the cloud.
Mm.
That in itself is a gold mine, in my opinion. Others have done similar things already. I mean, it's not a new thing to look at freedom in the cloud. But what we're doing here is we're trying to see what is ready, what is already in Debian, and what needs to be in Debian.
Mm.
And this in itself is a big step forward, so that anybody now who is a Debian developer or a Debian contributor and interested in these freedom movements, they can have a look at the Freedom Box wiki page at the wikidebian.org, and then they can look at how can I contribute by packaging something, or maybe they know some things that they want to encourage others to package. Then the other part of the Freedom Box project is, of course, to make an installation routine and a maintenance of an actual box that runs this derivative or this flavor of Debian.
Yeah. So, what are some of the early visions of, let's say we have hardware that we're going to install in this Freedom Box. What is the vision that, you know, this effort has for the home user? Do we want to try and make this? I mean, I think Debian is the perfect project for this, because I think it could get to the point where it's one of those things where you just set it and forget it. The end user would just have it somewhere in their house and just forget that they even have it. And, you know, then they'll be able to access all of their documents, emails. You know, we can get off of this quote unquote cloud system with all these other companies hanging on to our information, our documents, our pictures, our email, and we'll be able to maintain all of our own stuff on our own computer, and we don't need to be worried about being locked out by these proprietary companies.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like you've already done your homework on the Freedom Box project. I mean, this is also, as I see it, Eben Moglen done a clever move on targeting Debian for this, because, like, we are known for running servers or providing a system for that is optimal for running servers,
right.
Which means we might not be the most beautiful desktop, but we might be one of the most solid, reliable server systems.
Mm.
Meaning the kinds of systems that you don't want to touch.
Mm.
You want them to maintain itself.
Right.
But still, there is a challenge of having a system that is completely remote controlled.
Mm.
I mean, you never have a shell account on the machine.
Right.
And Debian is not optimized for that. We our fundamental design of our installer and our configuration maintenance is not optimized for only having a web GUI.
Right.
So there's a challenge there. Of as I see it, the challenge is a big one, but that might take 5 years, which is to convince everybody in Debian to not only think about shell access, but think about more generic. Look, it is already in the concept of, for instance, the DebConf mechanism that we use a lot in Debian. The mechanism to maintain configuration, to provide the API between the package maintainer and the installed system.
Mm.
For asking questions or querying questions about the installed package, that API was already from the beginning designed for remote access or for different kinds of storage and things like that. So we can use that in principle, but in reality, the thing that has been most tested and most tried out is the shell access.
Yeah,
the dialogue popping up in a full screen shell account and asking, do you want this or do you want that?
Right.
There is a proof of concept web interface are there claims to be a proof of concept web interface? I've never ever seen it, and it might not work. It might be something that was thrown together by Joey Hess, the author of DevConf, or the main author, I think. But I don't think it has ever been really used. So.
Back to my question then is the vision then, like I was saying, is it, is the idea of a freedom box then to be that sort of, are you looking to design it so an end user can, take this CD or whatever, maybe they have an extra box lying around, turn their old box into a freedom box and have their one stop, like personal, I really hate using cloud, but personal, cloud computer where they main, they have complete access and complete control over all of their data.
Yeah, I mean the fundamental thing of the of this the node, the machine functionality is that you store all of your information yourself instead of storing it somewhere at Google or somewhere else that others are, as Abe Moklin says it, are spying on your activities, on your log files. So his key mission is to move the log files, the activities of what you do, away from central services that is not controlled by you. You must be in control of your own log files. That is his key point of this. And then how to do that is by running your ser the server on your own. And what the Freedom Box, the Debian Freedom Box is about, is setting up a server that you should do the least possible interaction with. It's just a box that, imagine it is the router for your internet connection. Instead of having a Wi-Fi box, then you have a Wi-Fi plus Freedom box.
That's
So it does
interesting.
your internet connection, and then everything goes through that box. And maybe imagine that automatically, it every time you go to Facebook.com, then it filters your connection to Facebook.com, and if you are wanting to reach someone who also has a Freedom Box, maybe discovered through Freenet or through some of the free services. I don't know the details of these, but if they discover that, whoa, this person you're trying to chat with on Facebook, he's also somewhere else, then maybe it diverts you. So you don't even go to Facebook. Maybe it does aggressive things like that. We don't know yet, but it could be things like that.
That's an interesting concept.
But really, this what I'm talking about here, this is a piece of application code. It's a routing trick that you can set up. And this is not what Debian is about. Debian is about providing the box and maintaining the configuration and install and up-to-date software. It's not about inventing the software. That is done outside. Someone invents Tor and maintains Tor. Someone invents and maintains Freenet. Someone invents and maintains peer-to-peer DNS services. We shouldn't, in my opinion at least, we are not all of us agreeing on that, but in my opinion, we shouldn't invent anything in Debian. But because even without inventing anything new code, it still takes us 5 years to develop this configuration handling and this package handling of squeezing it into an ARM box.
Yeah, I liked what you said earlier before the interview that Debian doesn't create software, it packages it. And I thought that was great, a great way to put it.
I mean, essentially, what we do is we shrink wrap. We don't invent, really. Sure, we make a lot of invention on how to shrink wrap very cleverly, and but we do in reality we do not do that one thing. We do two things. One thing is that we compile and package. The other thing that we do is we structure the choices that is in all of the software that we package, so that it fits together. So, for instance, if a package can be compiled with the Berkeley DB 4.7, 4.8, 4.9, and 5.0, then we compile against the same version as a lot of other packages. And when we update to the newer version of Berkeley DB, we check that it works across the board. So we do a lot of these integration checks and integration mechanisms of how to. What if you then upgrade half of the packages and the other half of the packages, your internet connection was lost, so you only get half the way of the upgrade. We make sure that the machine still runs during the upgrade also. So there's a lot of details in it, but essentially what we do is we shrink wrap and we organize the choices of free software.
Is there so do you have any on the wiki that page that you mentioned, do you have any sort of input yet as to what direction the Freedom Box wants to go? Like, do you have any sort of any direction yet at all for
We do have lists of what cool software are out there.
Okay.
And we don't have one direction.
Okay.
The thing that happened with the Freedom Bus project was that it sparked an interest amongst a bunch of people, and some of these people are Debian developers. Some of these people are outside Debian, or they are part of Debian, but they are not the developers.
Right.
They are contributors in other ways.
Right.
Or maybe they are users and want to contribute, but cannot contribute by packaging.
Right.
And then there's people outside of Debian at all. I mean, just today there was one guy popping up and saying, I just asked him, hey, if he knew about Debian, and sure, he knew about it, but he was new to Debian at all. So, I mean, there are people interested in the freedom principles of the freedom in the cloud, and they want to seek what distribution does that.
Yeah.
But they don't really, they're not really tuned into Debian at all.
Right.
And so we have like the whole range within our, what is it, 20, 30 people in the mailing list. So some of those people want to contribute by installing a machine and configuring on top of the installation. And me, in the other end of the scale, I want to improve Debian so that the installation automatically handles all these things.
Mm.
You should never install anything on top of Debian.
So
it should be part of the Debian installation itself.
So could there be, would the ideal thing then be having sort of like a Freedom Box button install on the Debian installer? Would that be?
Yeah, that's my idea. I mean, at the moment, Debian has, when you install Debian, you install Debian is the universal system.
Right.
And then you choose, do you want this to handle a desktop?
Right, yeah.
And if you do, then it doesn't ask any more questions. It doesn't install the GNOME desktop.
Right.
Then you can do a trick at the beginning, before you even start the installer. You can do a trick and select a different kind of installation, then implicitly installs KDE instead of GNOME.
Right.
But this is a hack. This is because our installation mechanism isn't really handling flavors.
Mm.
And I imagine that ideally Debian should be handling flavors much more elegantly. It should include the flavors that Skoli Linux currently provides.
Mm.
Skoli Linux is currently not part of Debian, but all the contents of Skoli Linux is part of Debian.
Mm.
It just needs that little tiny finishing, polishing.
Yeah.
Then it all of it is in Debian. You just need to trigger it. But the triggering of Skoli Linux inside Debian is hidden. And we need to restructure the first pages of the installation routines so that you have a list of what are the possibilities.
Okay.
But what we are running into here is that because it's a global system, it's a universal operating system, then there's thousands of different use cases of Debian.
Right.
So we need to organize this in a hierarchy. So this is more of an organizational or a social dynamics discussion of, hey, how do we organize these things?
Yeah.
What should have first priority?
Yeah.
Some people are very annoyed today that GNOME is getting a first priority and KDE is second.
Yeah.
But that's historical. That's just because GNOME was the only one big desktop that was really free at the beginning.
Right.
But and then later on, when KDE became free, we didn't change anything. Because that's having multiple desktops. Whoa, that's a complication.
Yeah.
And we haven't handled this complication yet. These 5-10 years later, how much it is.
Yeah. So, do you know any of the programs that have been listed that are not recommended, but any of the programs that people have said, hey, this would be good to include into the Freedom Box set up? Do you know any of them off the top of your head that people have mentioned?
Oh, you mean some of the projects that it's not in Debian yet? Or how do you mean?
No,
I mean, there's.
like using Debian for the Freedom Box, like what are some of the software programs that people have said, well, we need to have, an email server, we need to have this. What are some of the other programs where they said, we need to include this as part of the Freedom
Oh,
Box installation?
I mean, it's as I see it. It's you can try look at it on a concrete level of these tools will be in the Freedom Box. I think it's flawed to think of it that way, really, because the Freedom Box is not one box. It's the vision of a box. As I see it, this is the platform where we are tuning into the mindset of what if Debian should not be a desktop and should not be a server, but should be a router. Then what? A router, and then thinking in freedom, a freedom router. And that sparks a lot of a list of different things that a router could do. A router slash server for routing purposes. And it sparks, some people are saying, whoa, real freedom comes if we avoid the DNS level. We need to get past that DNS level, or we need to make the peer-to-peer variation, the flavor of the DNS. Other people are saying that we should have alternatives to Facebook. That's one of the obvious ones, also mentioned by Eben Moklin, that we should think in including Diaspora for similar stuff. In the Freedom Box project, that some people have suggested that we should leverage, or we should work on top of like storage services. So we should allow the Freedom Box box to use for redistribution of documents, for instance. We should be able to use storage servers. I don't remember some of the names, but of these commercial services. But there's the whole range of people that want to not only avoid the concrete application services on the net, but also want to avoid the DNS system. And then there's the people saying, "Whoa, hey, relax. Let's stay with the DNS because that's too complex otherwise. Stay with IPv4, stay with the DNS, but then try to replace some of the application services." And then there's people saying, "Whoa, we should stay with everything that's on the internet today, but then we should try to build freedom on top of them." So you have the whole range of political ideologies of how do we create or gain freedom. And all of these people.
Sorry, it's my phone.
So all of these different ideas, we discuss it together, and we might never agree on what should be the Freedom Box, what it really should be in the end. But it's still beneficial to all of us to have it up front, all of these mechanisms.
One thing that
And
could like
in my opinion, which second?
No, I was gonna say one thing that I think could be interesting with an idea like this is sort of along the same lines as that whole diaspora movement with the open like Facebook clone or whatever. One thing that I like the idea that they do and that Google was trying to implement with their Wave project is what if the Freedom Box is sort of like a federated system where the more boxes that get up and running, they could basically kind of support each other as a one giant back end, sort of like the Freenet idea where people join their computers together and build this other thing, I guess, like this other realm, basically.
Yeah, and then again, the funny thing is, it's not just taking off and living by itself. I mean, all of the Freedom Boxes, the Debian-based Freedom Boxes, will still need Debian, and no doubt there will come an Ubuntu-based Freedom Box, a polished Freedom Box from Ubuntu, that works almost the same, but just cooler and easier, and with commercial agreements with some hardware vendors.
Right.
So you can buy it in the shops, actually. So you can buy your Freedom Box in the shops. The only backside, if you would call it that, is that you then need to upgrade each 6 months, because then you have, there's a new version of Ubuntu coming out,
right?
Or whatever it is. So, but the thing is, these freedoms is, you have to beware, in my opinion. What is it you are freeing, and what is it you're locking down? Debian, with Debian, you're locking down on using Debian, of course. I mean, so yes, you can recompile pieces of the code in Debian, but really you have a messed up system if you try to replace glibc, right?
Yeah.
So we assume that Debian is okay, and we're the good guys. And then on top of Debian, we make other freedoms.
Yeah, definitely.
But so the boxes are not taking off. They're not compiling itself. And the same with Freenet and Tor and the other services is that it's peer-to-peer networks, but it's not peer-to-peer software.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's not developed in a peer-to-peer manner. The one thing that is developing like that is this crazy thing of what is it? It was in the old PC, the One Laptop Per Child project, this graphical interface that was actually not accepted into Debian.
Oh, is it sugar?
Ah, oh, I forgot the name. No, yeah, Sugar is the desktop, but there's one piece of the Sugar project that is the that is actually a full computer system in itself,
Oh, I'm not
an
aware of that.
environment, virtual machine. Let me see if I can just find it here.
Sure.
The squeak is what was not accepted.
Squeak, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. The Squeak virtual machine and the Squeakland, this whole community, they have a software system that is graphical. The way that it evolves, the evolution of the development of the code is graphical. So anyone who can click can develop. And people are exchanging pieces, blobs, binary blobs with each other.
Okay.
So it's like you can imagine if you have a world, and then you develop a new breed of plants, and then you exchange it with others by exchanging seeds of how to grow this same plant.
Okay.
You never exchange the plant, and it's actually crazy because Debian have decided not to include it in part of the main system. Not because of, at the beginning it was because of licensing problems. At one point, Apple was very interested in Squeak, and so they own the license today, but they have no special interest in it anymore.
Huh.
So in the end, Steve Jobs himself, I think there's a story about Steve Jobs himself being pushed that much, so he said, "Okay, I'm releasing it as completely free software."
Huh.
So he's giving away the freedoms of working with because of push by Debian and others, that we need it to be completely free, not only free to use, but free to code
Wow,
in the sense of free software.
Surprised he
But
did that.
even if when this happened relatively recently, 2 years ago I think it was, even when that happened, Debian still rejected to include Squeak because the security people of Debian was feared that we cannot look through and spot if there are security flaws in the
Okay.
code because all the code is graphical.
Okay.
We cannot make a patch. So the whole fundamental thing of how to maintain and how to exchange patches, if people come and they're giving you a seed and saying you should grow this seed, then they're just saying, "Whoa, that's not how I'm doing. I won't apply a security patch by growing a new plant."
Okay, I see what you're saying. Man.
So that's actually, I think it's the only piece of code in Debian that is pushed to the non-free part, not because it's not free, but because it's too weird.
Man, so with the Freedom Box, if people want to get involved, I think you mentioned there's a mailing list and a wiki page. Can you give out any of those addresses so if people want to get involved with this, they can
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, The easiest reference point is go to wiki.debian.org slash freedombox.
Okay. And the mailing list and everything is right there.
Yeah, okay. Everything's right there. And if you spell it differently, then it should propose the correct spelling of the page. So freedombox is with it's a camel word, but even if you spell it wrong, you should get there.
Okay, eventually. Cool. Awesome.
wikidebian.org/freedombox.
Awesome, Jonas. I thank you for your time, and we're definitely gonna have to have you on again. I don't think we scratched the surface of the stuff that you do, so we'll definitely have you on again. And this was a very interesting topic.
You'd be most welcome.
Yeah, and I think I'm gonna be hopping on that mailing list. I'd like to see the progress of this. It's very interesting, so I'd like to.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'll be jumping on in the next day or two and signing up. So. Definitely want to be part of something like that.
And you should consider looking at the a proper SIP server instead of this mumble, because then you don't have interruptions in the middle of your interviews.
they won't hear it. We'll cut it out. So, but yeah, I appreciate your time, and like I said, I'll keep in touch with you, and we'll figure out which topic to tackle next time with you. So.
Sure.
Well, thanks, Jonas. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone or you yourself are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us so we can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.